colleagues, and good morning to the SIU who are going to be meeting with us this morning to brief us on TERS and UIF related matters. It's 5:30 and I think we are good to go. Sistombi, Ben, please just give guidance. There's just one apology. Honorable Hate will join us shortly. He's just in another parliamentary committee meeting. But otherwise, we're good to go. So, Sistombi, Ben, just give an indication and we will proceed accordingly in preparation for next week. So I think we are largely in the SIU's hands this morning. But Ben, Stombi?
Yes, we may proceed.
Okay. Right. Colleagues, I hope that is agreeable to you. So I'll hand over to the SIU. All right. There's the head of unit. Okay. We're good to go. Mazambane, the issues you raised with me, they are receiving attention, and I'm sure system will communicate with you accordingly. All right, let's hand over to the head of unit, Ubabu Mtivi and his team to brief us, and then they will field questions after that. Babu Somyo, unyana wakho undim siloku njobe ngakabi right uzakumnceda xa izinto zingahambi kakuhle ingane engakhali ifele emvilekweni. So ke Baba Mtivi, over to you.
Thank you honorable chair, honorable members of the SCOPA. We appreciate the opportunity to come and brief SCOPA this morning on the status of the SIU investigations into the CARES. With me from SIU, it's Mr. Leonard Lekgetho, who is the Chief Investigations Officer for SIU. This investigation falls under his portfolio. And we are also joined by Mr. Leroux, who is the lead investigator. He'll be doing the investigation part of the presentation. We're also joined by Mr. Keza Khanyaho, who's the spokesperson for SIU. And we're also joined by Ms. Nosihle Gumbi. She is in charge of the governance processes in SIU. Chair, without further ado, I'm going to request my colleague, Mr. Lekgetho, to project the presentation. Thank you, Mr. Lekgetho. If you go to the second slide. Thank you. Honorable Chair and honorable members, as I indicated, we are presenting today to give a status of our investigations into the
recording in progress.
Into TERS, which is, of course, managed by the Unemployment Insurance Fund. So we will be covering the following areas. I'll go through them quickly. The overview and SIU strategic focus, I think we have really over and over presented them to SCOPA. We'll not spend a lot of time on that. And then we go to the investigations themselves. So I think that's where we really need to spend time on. We'll cover matters under the proclamation R23 of 2020, and there are some of the investigations that we did based on the secondment. We will cover that, and there was also now another proclamation which was issued, which is R8 of 2021. We'll cover matters under that, and then we will also indicate that we have a project plan, and we've also signed a letter of engagement with the department or the UIF, and the duration of the investigation. We have also faced the investigation. There's phase one, which deals with personal employees, which are mainly government officials. There's also a process under 10 there, where we confront people who would have received the TERS unduly, and they acknowledge that, and we complete the acknowledgement of debt with them. So we'll outline all of that to the committee. And then we also have some other matters called ad hoc matters. We'll outline those. And then we also give some of the specific matters that we have investigated. We'll outline what this Simbini matter is, and some of the inmates in the correctional centers that receive the TERS. And then there's also what's called labor activation program, which was run at the department. And we also then cover the outcomes that we have achieved to date and the collaboration with the South African Police Service. And we also outline the costs of the investigation. Next slide, Mr. Lekgetho. Now, go to slide number four. As I indicated, Chair, these are the SIU legislative mandate, which the committee by now is really well aware of. With your permission, I'll go to the next slide. The vision and mission, of course, we've also covered them before. It hasn't changed. We'll be holding our next strategic session 8, 9, 10 December, where we review all of this. If we amend them, we'll present to the committee the next time we appear. Next slide. I'll just spend a few minutes on this one, although we've presented it before. Honorable Chair and honorable members, you'll see as we present that we will be saying the findings that we have made and the undue payments that we have made, we are dealing with them in accordance with all these outcomes. Where it's appropriate, we follow the civil route, the civil litigation process, and this acknowledgement of debt are mainly dealt under this bracket of civil litigation. And where there's a need, we will proceed to either the special tribunal or any other forum that's appropriate. And then where appropriate, of course, we also refer disciplinary actions to the state institution. In this case, it would be UIF. And you'll see there's a number of cases under the criminal investigations aspect where we are collaborating with the SAPS, and those would then be progressed to the prosecutions. And then if there's a need to refer to other regulatory authorities, we do that. And at the end of the presentation, we will also just mention some of the systemic recommendations we will be making to the UIF so that we can prevent these irregularities from happening. So all in all, we would like to see consequence management outlined under all these brackets, and of course the improvement of the administration going forward. Can we go to the next slide? Next slide. These strategic focus areas, we've covered them before to the committee. I will really not cover them again, but as we do our business, we ensure that all of these are taken into account. These have really brought us to a stage where we effectively improve our investigations, mainly the turnaround times, and ensuring that there's consequence management, civil litigation, and so on. I will not cover all of them, Honorable Chair. We have presented to the committee before. If you can move on, Mr. Lekgetho, please. Next slide. Honorable Chair, I think at this stage, I'm going to hand over to my colleague, Mr. Leroux. We now start off effectively with the status of the investigations. Mr. Leroux, if I can hand over to you, sir, please.
Yes, thank you, Advocate, and good morning, Honourable Chair and the Honourable Members of SCOBA. It's indeed an honour to again present to this committee, specifically in this instance relating to UIF. So the introduction, we'll start off there. Thank you very much. So on the 22nd of August, 2020, the Minister of Employment and Labour referred allegations of irregularities on the Unemployment Insurance Fund to the SIU. The Minister requested the SIU to review the AGSA report on findings relating to the TERS pay during the COVID-19 period. Because only one matter related to on this COVID awareness campaign of the UIF fell within the ambit of that proclamation, R23, the SIU commenced with an investigation in terms of a secondment agreement to review the information and the records relating to the TERS payments. So the SIU was able to secure sufficient evidence during the secondment investigation in support of a national UIF proclamation. The proclamation R8 of 2021 was then signed by the President on the 1st of April 2021 and published in the Government Gazette. This presentation provides an update on the matters investigated under the secondment and the proclamation R23 of 2020, as well as it covers the investigation to date under proclamation 8 of 2021. So during the investigation period, a total of 13,447,006 employees received TERS payments or benefits from the UIF. These employees were linked to at least 1,156,565 companies, or what we refer to as employers, and a total amount of 57 billion rand was paid out by the UIF since the inception of the scheme. Now we are going to move over to the matters covered under the proclamation R23 of 2020, and that was effectively the PPE proclamation, and we felt it prudent to inform the committee of a specific matter that we dealt with under that proclamation, as it falls within the UIF space. So the AGSA's findings suggested that no proper SCM process was followed to appoint at least five companies for an awareness campaign relating to TERS, and that the appointments were made based on a motivation for sole service providers. The SIU commenced with its investigation into this matter on the 24th of August 2020. The value of the five contracts amounted to 6.1 million. The next slide depicts the actual RFQs that were procured and the values on the side, indicating the 6.1 million rand for those type of services requested by the UIF. So when the investigation commenced, we found that there were five service providers that were appointed without following any proper SCM process. Where relevant, practice notes number 8 of 2007 and 8 requires that all procurement of goods and services not exceeding 500,000, that at least three quotations must be obtained, which the UIF failed to do. The appointments were not in compliance with section 217 of the Constitution, as well as section 51A13 of the PFMA. The motivation for the use of sole service providers amounted to a misrepresentation due to the fact that there were several other commercial radio stations registered with ICASA in the respective provinces where these services were conducted. Furthermore, the SABC, a state-owned company, was able to deliver the same message through 11 languages. And we met with the SABC and took affidavits from them in this regard. One SCM official failed in her duties when she allowed the marketing and communications department to predetermine the names of the service providers. This failure resulted in an irregular expenditure for the UIF in the amount of 6.1 million. The recommendations, approval, appointments, and the payments of these service providers were therefore in contravention of section 51A3 of the PFM. We move over to the consequence management section of this specific issue. And as we are sitting here today, our members are testifying in disciplinaries at the moment. But the SIU referred seven disciplinary referrals to the Acting Commissioner on the 11th of December 2020. Charges have been brought against all the officials. Five officials were found guilty and received written warnings. Two matters are still ongoing. The SIU then further made further two DC referrals against the COO and the then commissioner of the UIF. And as I just mentioned, these matters are currently being heard and our members are currently testifying. The next slide deals with the secondment investigation, now specifically dealing with TERS. So the SIU then signed the secondment agreement between the Department of Employment and Labour on the 5th of September 2020. As we indicated earlier, we've received sufficient evidence to support a motivation for a proclamation. So the AGSA made a commitment to the president to assist government in dealing with the financial management risk posed by the emergency measures taken due to the outbreak of the global coronavirus pandemic. Based on the aforementioned, the AGSA focused on 1, COVID-19-related account balances and classes of transactions, and 2, compliance with key legislation applicable to the COVID-19-related transactions, funds, and processes. So the next slide deals with the secondment investigation that focused on the following as an interim. Government employees with personal numbers claiming from the relief fund, SANDF staff claiming from the fund, inmates claiming from the fund, and then deceased ID numbers being used in claims from the fund. So the UAF data was a very important area for us to focus on and to do some of our work in that space. The secondment team initially experienced certain challenges with regards to the data from the UAF due to incompatibility with the SIU's databases and systems. To alleviate this, the team relied on the data provided by the AGSA during their audit processes. The SIU subsequently received all the required data from the UIF for further analysis and verification. And we are glad to say that the SIU now has full access in terms of the UIF databases due to us and our specific divisions within the SIU be given access to this information. We now move on to the next slide, which refers to Proclamation 8 of 2021. So this proclamation was published on the 1st of April 2021. The proclamation period includes matters which took place between 1 March 2020 and the date of the publication of this proclamation, or which took place prior to 1 March 2020 or after the date of the publication of this proclamation, but is relevant to, connected with, incidental or ancillary to matters mentioned in the schedule, or involve the same persons, entities, or contracts investigated under the authority of this proclamation. So this gives us quite a scope to look at, and it gives the SIU its powers. The proclamation itself, as per the schedule to this proclamation, the SIU is mandated to investigate the following: maladministration in the affairs of the UIF in relation to the payments of COVID-19 TERS benefits to persons who, A, were not entitled to receive such payments, or B, submitted false, irregular, invalid, or defective applications to the UIF, including the causes of such maladministration. The second issue is any unlawful or improper conduct by A, officials or employees of the UIF, or B, any other person or entity in relation to the allegations set out in paragraph 1 above of this schedule, including the causes of such unlawful or improper conduct, and any losses, damages, or actual potential prejudice suffered by the UIF or the state. The project plan and letter of engagement is where we're moving on to. So the letter of engagement between the SIU and the department was signed on the 31st of May 2021. Since 26 key audit observations were identified by the AGSA, the investigation will be conducted in phases. Phase one of this investigation focused specifically on individuals who received TERS benefits while on PERSEL, that is, employed by the state or by government. The duration of the investigation, next slide please, Leonard. Thank you. The duration, the phase one of this investigation commenced on the 1st of June 2021 and will take approximately 6 months to complete, ending on the 30th of November 2021. Phase two will commence immediately upon completion of phase one and may vary to a province. That would be in terms of those 26 key audit observations, the provinces would then go into those investigations as phase two, three, and so on. The SIU is currently dealing with at least 107 ad hoc matters additional to phase one of the investigation. We could not take or not take on those matters due to the fact that they were brought to the SIU through an ad hoc basis, and we've had to then immediately put teams on board to investigate those matters. So now we deal with the duration of the investigation. Indicative key project milestones on phase one, the project setup scoping documentation collection, walkthrough and planning happened between 1 June 2021 and 30 June. Project delivery that would include the detailed investigation would be 1 July 2020, ending on the 30th of November 2021. And project closeout and reporting would be 20 December 2021. Monthly progress updates to the UIF and the department. Now that happens on a monthly basis, and we can confirm that it is received by the department. Now we move over to phase one, and we're going to go into detail about the Purcell employees. The next phase deals with the Purcell employees investigation. Phase one of the investigation focuses on the employees who are allocated Purcell numbers and who received a TERS benefit during the COVID-19. At least 6,000 employees were identified within 24 government departments with the assistance of the Department of Public Service and Administration. Upon signing of the proclamation, the SIU used a phased approach to roll out the investigation within the various provinces. All nine provinces, as well as the national office, were allocated matters that fall within their respective province. We go now into the provinces specifically, and we're going to go into numbers of matters and the values of them. So in the Eastern Cape, you would notice that there was at least 501 matters in 11 departments amounting to 106 million rand. The next slide shows the actual departments and how many individuals are in those departments. So for instance, I'll go to the Eastern Cape Department of Education. You'll see that there were 222 individuals with Purcell numbers who were on a claim submitted to the UIF from a, what we refer to as an employer. But here there's an indication of how many departments and how many numbers are there per department. You'll see that on the next slide, the Eastern Cape Department of Health had 237 matters in that specific department, bringing the number to 501 in that specific province. So you'll see, Chair, throughout the presentation that the numbers reflect strongly at certain government departments. So now we move over to the Free State. We have 491 matters with 8 departments to the value of 4.8 million. If we go to the next slide, again, you'll see the Department of Education came in at 320 matters and the Department of Health in the Free State came in at 153 matters. Move to the next slide, we'll see that the Free State Department of Social Development came in at 10, bringing the total number up to 491 matters in that province. The next matter is for Gauteng. Here we find 1,664 individuals at 10 departments amounting to 15.6 million rand. Here again, the Department of Education comes in strongly at 1,231 and the Department of Health at 361. The Office of the Premier had 23 and Provincial Treasury had also 23 matters, bringing the matter up to 1,664. The next slide deals with KwaZulu-Natal. Here we had 769 matters at 11 departments amounting to approximately 9.8 million. Moving over to the next one again, the Department of Education at 340 and the Department of Health at 224. Here we have the Department of Transport at 127 on the next slide, bringing the matters up to 769 matters in that respective province. In Limpopo, we had 168 matters. Number of departments are 7 in the amount of 1.7 million. Here we have the larger ones, Department of Education at 92 and the Department of Health at 40, bringing COCTA up to 28 in a total amount of 168 matters in the Limpopo province. The Mpumalanga province, we had 282 matters at 7 departments with the estimate value of 2.026 million. Here, once again, in Mpumalanga, Department of Education, 147, and the Department of Health, 125, with the rest of the departments coming in at lower numbers. And then in the Northern Cape, we had 180 individuals for 6 departments to the value of 25.4 million. Now, here you'll again see the Department of Education coming in at 113, with the Department of Health at 61, bringing the matters to 180. Then in the Northwest, we have 339 matters at 6 departments amounting to 69.8 million. Here again, the Department of Health at 178 and the Department of Education at 153, bringing the total to 369, with other departments coming in with smaller numbers. The Western Cape, 393 matters, four departments at 1.1 million. Here, the Department of Education came in at 414 matters, and the Department of Health at 518, with other smaller numbers, at then coming in at 939, as indicated earlier. Then on the national departments, we have 657 individuals identified, 24 government departments were identified to the value of 114.4 million. Here we see the big numbers at agriculture at 67, Department of Correctional Services at 119, the Department of Higher Education and Training sitting at 169, the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development at 90, South African Police Services at 90. Must remember that some of these people were actually resources that were critical at the time and were not necessarily people that were unemployed at the time. Department of Social Development, 53 numbers, and then we came in at a total of 657 for national. Now, we're going to move over to the approach to the investigation. So we would separate the personnel data obtained from Forensic Data Analysis Division, that's our internal 4DAD division, and analyze it for distribution to the various provinces. We open the case files, allocate the files to the investigation teams, tracing on employers, employees, and UIF officials, request TransUnion in IEITC information from 4DAD, where UIF officials and employees are not easily traceable. Then we request information through the use of the Section 5-2A of the SIU Act from the heads of departments at the respective provinces to request the personal information of those individuals, conduct interviews with the employers or employees traced. Now, the employer, in this case, is a person or a company that would use an ID number in a claim that would reflect the same ID number as a person employed by government. Obtain affidavits from the employers or the employees identified. In the event that the employer or the employer admits to undue benefit or irregular applications for TERS payments from the UIF, the acknowledgement of debt process will then be considered. And as it is, we are considering it and doing it. Obtain loss calculation from the UIF and sign AODs where the UIF suffered a loss. And then we request information from the employer whether the employee or the beneficiary had permission to do outside remuneration work. What we mean by that is, if the department has a personnel file on this person, there must be a request for outside remuneration on the file. In the event that the criminality is detected, evidence will be collected and handed to the SIU lawyers with a detailed memorandum from the team for consideration of disciplinary and or criminal referrals. Investigate the allegations of corruption between the UIF officials and applicants. Depending on the decision by the internal lawyer, the investigation team must take further action by referring the evidence to the NPA for prosecution, refer matters to the chief legal counsel within the SIU for litigation, and to the client department for disciplinary action. Closure memos to be completed once the investigation is finalized, and that then reflects on our performance management system. The AOD process is something that we thought it's prudent to inform SCOPA, the honorable members, of what the process is. An AOD is a form of litigation by the SIU to fast-track recoveries from employers or employees. This is a more cost-effective process of recovering the money that is paid directly into the SIU's trust account, which is later transferred back to the UIF. Deadlines for payments are agreed upon between the SIU and the debtor, and the interest is charged at the PFMA rates currently at 7%. When debtors fail to meet the agreed payment schedule, the SIU has the option to obtain a default court order. The SIU, however, still refers any criminality to the NPA, as well as disciplinary action where government employees are involved, to the respective departments for consequence management. Now we're going to move over, Honourable Chair, to the ad hoc matters that were received by the SIU. So these matters were received from various sources, including Corruption Watch and the UIF. These are matters that are additional to the AGSA audit findings and include allegations against entities and individuals as received from witnesses. all ad hoc matters that fall within the ambit of the proclamation are currently being investigated by the different provinces. Here's an indication on the next slide of how many matters we receive per province on an ad hoc basis. So Eastern Cape province, we receive one. The Free State, we receive three. In the Gauteng province, 25. In Limpopo, 61. In Mpumalanga, 6. The North Cape province, Northern Cape province, sorry, 1. And the Northwest province, 7. On the next slide, the Western Cape, we received 18, and on the national level, we received 1. So the matters in the Eastern Cape, we just want to highlight to the committee some of these ad hoc matters and the progress we've made on some of them. The SA is currently investigating a matter relating to the Eastern Cape Transport Cooperative Limited, the ECTTC, involving a claim of 19.7 billion rand. The application was submitted for 5,535 employees, and 62 bank accounts have been frozen to date, where we believe that this matter is fraudulent, and that we are working very closely with the Hawks on this matter. In the Free State province, a private hospital applied to receive TERS in May of 2020. This hospital had not closed due to lockdown. Employees continued to receive full salaries throughout the lockdown period. The hospital was approached in relation to the TERS payments not due and owing. The hospital opted to pay the refund of 465,591.60 directly to the UIF, despite the SIU having started engaging with them for the purposes of an AOD. So the good thing here is that they repaid the money, but directly to the UIF. What we then discovered is that they did not pay the interest on that specific amount, and the SIU then signed an AOD for 22,866.61 to recover the interest from this money. In the Gauteng province, we received 25 matters as indicated earlier, and they were all referred to by corruption watch. So the SIU signed 7 AODs with private companies to the total amount of 10.1 million rand on those ad hoc matters. 5 matters have been finalized and 17 matters are still under investigation. Matters in the Western Cape province. A matter was referred to by DPCI, to the SIU for civil recovery. The SIU signed an AOD with the government employee for an amount of 7,594 rand. The DPCI is currently pursuing criminal charges against the state employee from the Department of Employment and Labour under case number Cape Town Central Inquiry 3 of 6/2021. A further matter was reported by DPCI to the SIU for civil recovery. The SIU signed an AOD with this private company in the amount of 205,696 rand. The DPCI is currently pursuing criminal charges against this company and under the Cape Town Central Inquiry number 4 of April 2021. A further matter was reported to the SIU by DPCI for civil recovery. The SIU signed an AOD with a private company for an amount of 345,696 rand. The DPCI is currently pursuing the criminal charges under Cape Town Inquiry 8 of February 2021. That brings the total amount on those three matters to 558,986 rand recovered to date on those three matters in the Western Cape. A further matter was reported by a whistleblower to the SIU. The reporter alleged that the private company claimed TERS money on his behalf and that he did not receive all these TERS money from this company. The company was approached and it was established that this private company was operational during the lockdown period, and overpayments were made to the private company, which the company agreed to pay back. A total amount of 707,313.70 rand were then recovered from this company. So the good thing here is just one whistleblower bringing a matter, the SIU then does a full audit on that company, and in this instance, we would be able to recover the full overpayment to that company. Now, some ad hoc matters that were reported to the national level. On the 26th of July, 2021, the UIF requested the SIU to assist with the recovery of a UIF TERS fund by a private entity that was identified through an audit. The private entity was approached by the SIU and were prepared to reimburse the payment that they received, or overpayment that they received from UIF. They furthermore indicated that there were seven other entities that fell under the same umbrella company who also received overpayments from TERS. The funds were held in a separate non-interest-bearing trust account opened by this company, specifically for TERS claims. On the 1st of August 2021, a total amount of 1.880 million was recovered from this company and paid into the SAU's account. Now we found it prudent, next slide please, Leonard, to discuss one specific matter relating to Mr. Simbini. Mr. Simbini is a private individual who is the sole director of a company called Impossible Services Pty Limited. He submitted over 6,000 TERS claims to the value of 111 million on behalf of Impossible Services for various employees to his company by using an online claiming process of the Department of Employment and Labor. Simbini used over 1,200 ID numbers that were duplicated by himself in order to generate a claim. So what we are saying by that is he kept on using the same ID numbers in different claims. It was established that the same IP address was used to generate the claims. According to the records, the only registered employee of Impossible Services was Simbini himself. There was therefore no other registered employees for Impossible Services that TERS money could be claimed for. The money was paid into the bank account of Impossible Services, and at that stage, 110 million was preserved. An amount of 1 million was already withdrawn by Mr. Simbini. It was established that Simbini moved the money from one bank account to another from time to time to avoid detection by the UIF through an algorithm on money not spent. I just want to explain that quickly to the chair and to the honorable members. The algorithm was created by the department. So if the money is paid into a specific account and the money is not immediately paid out to the employees, the UIF then blocks that money and returns it to the UIF. So what they have realized, maybe from internal information, is that they have to move the money all the time to avoid this detection. A criminal case was opened under Pretoria CAS 279 of 11-2020 and 314 of 11-2020, and Simbini appeared in court in September of 2021. The next court date is set for 5 December 2021. The AFU is doing the recovery on the matter. The AFU did assure the SIT that the money for the preservation order would be returned to the department once the money or matter has been finalized in court. And that I'm referring to in the civil court. Just moving on to matters relating to some of our focus areas is the inmates. So we have identified seven inmates who received TERS benefits. This relates to identity theft by foreign nationals who used ID numbers of incarcerated SA citizens to apply for work in South Africa. At this stage, it is not clear how the foreign nationals obtained the said IDs. Seven companies were identified, interviewed, and affidavits obtained from their representatives. Affidavits were obtained from DCS to confirm that the identified individuals were indeed incarcerated during the period in question. The SIU is in the process of referring these matters to the NPA and Home Affairs. So what we have done is we've created a working relationship with Home Affairs, where every time we uncover a false ID being used, we refer that matter to Home Affairs immediately to rectify it on their systems. Then we want to move over to a labor activation program. This program, the SIU entered into a secondment agreement with the UIF in relation to the labor activation program. The secondment period was from 25 January 2021 to 23 April 2021. The investigator related to one specific matter involving a chief director and a director within the program. The SIU uncovered serious elements of corruption involving external service providers, upon which a criminal case was registered with the DPCI and the inquiry ACI head office 2 of May 2021. The director is currently on suspension as a result of this investigation. The SIU issued a secondment investigation report to the commissioner and the DG during May of 2021, which included the evidence involving UIF officials. The SIU is currently considering motivating for a proclamation in relation to the labor activation program. Just want to move over quickly to the outcomes that the SIU have achieved to date. So we have finalized a total of 303 matters. We have managed to recover 23.4 million rand, and there were a total of 80 criminal matters that were registered. Now the collaboration with the SAPS. So the SIU was alerted on the 22nd of October 2020 that 11 suspects were arrested relating to fraud perpetrated against the UIF. The information depicted in the next slide shows the arrests that were made. The secondees work closely with the Hawks to ensure that the AFU is brought on board to assist in recovery. The next slide is the details related to the arrest made by the Hawks. On the left, you'll find the CAS numbers of the various police stations where the criminal cases have been registered, and the court dates as last we have been informed, and the potential loss or actual loss suffered by the UIF. At this point, in only relating to these five matters is 14.4 million. The UIF recovered a total of 4.7 million to date, and the number of arrests were 11. We move over to the next slide, and these are cases that are currently with the Special Commercial Crimes Unit in Pretoria. So a total of 70 criminal cases were registered with the SAPS and are currently under investigation by the SCCU in Pretoria. According to the police, no arrests have been made in relation to these matters to date. The total value of these seven matters amounted to 1.4 million rand. The SIU is working together with all law enforcement agencies and the Fusion Hub. The SIU is assisting the police with all the available records in order to speed up the criminal investigation. This includes packaging and providing information received from the UIF. What we can say at this point is that we have access to the UIF database now, so it's easier for us to withdraw, unload, or download the information and provide it directly to the police for their criminal investigation. The cost of the investigation is the next slide we're dealing with. So for phase one of the investigation that relates to payments of at least 6,000 per cell officials, is valued at 351 million rand. The cost estimated to complete this investigation is 40 million. The cost includes 87 resources, as you would see in the next slide, in 10 provinces, i.e. 10 SIU offices, which includes the national office. The cost further includes the project setup and scoping. That's document collection, walkthroughs and planning, project delivery. That includes the detailed investigation of each matter, as well as the project closeout and reporting. The next slide indicates the levels of individuals that have been appointed. So we have a forensic investigation specialist who's overall leading the matter. Then we have a chief legal specialist who's the overall legal oversight on the matter. Principal forensic lawyer, we have three. A chief forensic lawyer, three. Principal forensic investigator, nine. Chief forensic investigators at 18, and then your forensic investigators at 40. And then a data analyst expert is one. The next slide deals with the forensic data analyst, two. Admin officers, nine, bringing the total number of staff on this project to 87. I wish to thank the chairperson, as well as the committee, for the opportunity to present this matter to yourself today. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you very much, my colleague, Mr. Leroux. Honorable Chair and honorable members, just to close off, the committee can probably just see the magnitude of the investigation that is being conducted and the kind of outcomes that have been achieved. Of importance is really just to show the investigation that has uncovered the modus operandi by all of these corrupt private companies, individuals, and government officials who are involved. So to do that, the investigation team had to really go through an elaborate data analysis, which they are continuing to do, of course, to ensure that the investigation is completed effectively. I think I need to just emphasize, Honorable Chair, that and this question often comes up, that where we conclude the acknowledgement of death, as the committee would have heard, that we are saying there that it does not exonerate the person or the company who signs acknowledgement of debt from any criminal prosecution where the evidence is brought up. So, Honourable Chair, once more, the investigation does reveal an amount of collusion between government officials, UAF in particular, and private companies and individuals, and we will ensure that that kind of corruption is dealt with in line with the outcomes that we presented before, and we are happy at this stage to see that the criminal investigation aspect and the criminal consequence management is also gaining traction, so that all these outcomes should be handled appropriately. Chair, you will see that there are scenarios that we have spelled out in terms of those ad hoc matters. I'll not repeat them, but it's very clear that this was an intentional, systematic approach by those who are involved on a corrupt basis to fleece the monies of the UIF, and we are dealing with that appropriately. So, Chair, in line with our consequence management and systemic recommendations approach, we will be engaging and putting together the systemic recommendation document, which we can, of course, also share with the committee. And that has to answer or address the following. Why did this happen at such a large scale? There is a clear indication, and that document also has to address that which controls have failed in this regard. There is clearly an indication of controls that have failed on the part of the UIF, and those have to be identified so that they can be improved to avoid this from happening in the future. We need to ensure that measures are put in place indeed to avoid that going forward. We are also envisaging that we will recommend to the UIF to review all these processes and possibly issue guidelines on how to effectively process these applications going forward, including the checks and balances to review who has applied and whether they qualify. Clearly, in this regard, it wasn't done. If it was done, it was not done effectively. And another point is really just to check who applied on behalf of all this, and this is where we identify private companies, even in government, all of those departments that have been indicated, the question of who applied for them, on what basis, what led to that, so that we can identify if there are further consequence management processes that we need to embark on. My colleague, Mr. Lakheto, just indicated to me that there's a recent matter, and I indicated that it might be really important for the Honourable Committee to also be informed of that scenario. And I'll really request just a 2 minutes so that Mr. Lakheto can also just sketch out one of the other scenarios that we have picked up under the ad hoc matters that have been referred. And Honourable Chair, that will then be the end of our presentation. Mr. Lakheto, just please outline to the Honourable Committee one of the recently received scenarios that we are dealing with.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members and everybody present. One of the scenarios that I indicated to advocate was someone that indicated they went to a village and they asked the chief to organize all unemployed people. And as a result, the chief managed to organize all unemployed people with matric. They took their ID copies. Then they went and created the company. Then they claimed to UIF based on those ID that they've received from the village. As a result, they got money. They didn't pay anything to those people in the village. One of the members who submitted the ID copy applied for a TAFSA NS pass, and he received a notification that he's currently working. Then he went and asked and said, why am I? You say I'm working, because as far as I understand, I'm going to school and I've applied for a bursary. Then they indicated that somebody applied for you because indicated that you are working. That's how they discovered that indeed these people went and applied for UIF and created employee out of that. So they just go around to and say, organize people, obtain ID number, create a company, claim to UIF and receive the money, then they move on. So that's one of the scenarios that we are currently looking at. And I think the investigation is going well so far. Thank you, Advocate.
No, thank you, Mr. Lafayette. Honorable Chair, we just thought it appropriate to just outline that kind of scenario. Because it really leads us to this similar finding that there is really a need. Firstly, when we uncovered it, like we have uncovered it now, we have to make sure that anyone who is responsible is dealt with appropriately. But on the part of the organization, that's the UIF part, we really need to engage so that we spell out this method of operation, the modus operandi of these people, so that perhaps they could also just build up the kind of due diligence on their part when they check all of these applications. And now, even in this case, students end up being prejudiced that they are fraudulently used to apply, and when they really need to apply for example, NSFAS, now they can't. They can't get it because some fraudster or corrupt person used their names to apply for NSFAS. We have really found that to be really, really unacceptable, and whoever is involved, we will ensure that they are dealt with appropriately. Honorable Chair, that brings us to the end of the presentation. We appreciate the time through you, Honorable Chair, and to the honorable members. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that very comprehensive update on all these very complex matters which are also unearthing the syndicates which are taking all of us for a ride. I'm going to hand over to you, colleagues. I see Babison has already indicated that Babison has indicated that he wants to field questions. Babison, I'm going to send over to you to indicate when you want to raise issues. Babison?
Hello, Chairman.
Follow that.
I hope that you're well.
Yeah, cool.
Thank you very much, Advocate Mochivi. The report is really frightening, though the level of excitement is the fact that you are making critical findings on your investigations. One question I have might be not necessarily answered fully by yourself. I think you have made this comment on the system's failures. What you have alluded to, the case which involved one employee, the Simbili matter, which has claimed 111 million rands for several employees, only to find out there's only one, which is himself. Is that not a clear indication that UIF systems, or even the entirety of the managerial a group of the institution, are sleeping on the job? And thirdly, if you look into other areas which you have indicated, there's an area which indicates a link of various departments in terms of issuance whether looking into issuance of IDs and the use of such IDs, and the failure to pick the fact that the same ID is used several, or one is a student, one pretends to be employed, unemployed, one is the owner of company, and such a system failure is not only exposing UIF, it's exposing the entirety of government or state systems, and therefore there's a higher risk on the level of exposure of a government to various risk area, and therefore it might be that it's yourselves today who are making these kinds of findings, and you are making referrals to the UIF to follow. But it looks like it's not only for the UIF to follow. If the system issue is within the embodiment of the state general, government ought to be worried about such a findings. Because here, it tells a story about CETA, which is responsible for government or state technologies in as far as IT and other communication-related intricacies. So these situations, you might make findings, you might report on such findings, you might find the criminality around it, but it somewhat tells government to fix its operational systems. And if that is not happening, we are still to see more frightening outcomes, not only on the monetary side, even on security instances. So this is a very a frightening aspect, which I thought that let me find a way to talk to. The last matter refers to the fact that the state employees, government employees have been identified being involved in such instances. Is it possible, or have you tried it, to refer the names as you have per province, that such names referred to each and every department while you are making these investigations? They're coming at a cost, and as well, some would take their own time. You must make it swell and good, as well appreciated. But why can't those names identified be referred to such departments, so that departments should make their own contribution to inform those individuals that there is an existing allegation against each of them for the benefit on this a kind of a resource, and therefore they must somewhat plead their case, or even they could easily repay such amounts after that information has been thrown to them. So I wanted to check the possibility of doing that as well while you are looking into these investigative instances. Thank you very much for the good work. I think the report indicates good progress on those matters. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Babusan. Let's get a response to that, and then Babulis, you'll come in afterwards.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Honourable Somio, we really appreciate those comments, and I agree. And it is really our observation that there is an indication of an operational risk on the part of the UIF. And the reason why we say that, clearly operational risk entails the failure of people, process, and systems. And we will be unpacking that in that systemic recommendation that we will be doing to ensure that the UIF should urgently develop a plan that will be monitored to ensure that the system itself is improved generally. I think it's really an accurate observation by the Honorable Somio that there is a need for the improvement of the administration on the part of the UIF. Clearly, there is involvement of government officials, as indicated in those respective departments. Honorable Somio, we are thankful for that comment. We will speed up the referrals of those names to the departments so that some action can be taken, which we will recommend appropriately. And as we have indicated in the presentation, that once we approach most of those officials, they do acknowledge and we do sign acknowledgement of debt. And we do the acknowledgement of debt because one could probably say, as my colleague indicated, it's a cost-effective manner of recovering so that we don't get engaged in expensive litigation process when somebody has acknowledged that they have been paid unduly. Of course, they are not exonerated from any criminal action where we find that there's evidence pointing to that, and the part of the disciplinary process, which we will then refer those names to the departments. I think rather than really just agreeing with the Honorable Somio, I think of importance this points to the urgent need for the improvement of the system. And what we always do with the state institutions when we have identified these irregularities, we do engage with them, and we've done this in several state institutions, including in some of the local government institutions. We do engage in a focused engagement or workshop where we spell out what we have found and what is required and what our recommendations are. And this ends up informing the program of action or the implementation plan or the corrective action on the part of the state institution. This is done by a separate department in SIU, which really focuses mainly on the prevention side of the fight against corruption. So we will do that, Honorable Somio. I do agree again, the use of IDs, the system should really enable UIF so that when an ID has been used, firstly to check who does the ID belong to, is this person, does he or she qualify for the TERS or any other payment, and whether it has been used before. You know, that system should be able to enable the UIF to plug those gaps so that there is no duplication of usage of IDs and so on, which we have seen in some of the findings. Those would then be part of the recommendations which UIF will have to deal with relating to systems improvement. And if that indicates any other improvements on the part of CETA, they'll probably have to be taken up as well. But we thank you, Honorable Somio. We will activate that part specifically to ensure that we engage with UIF and refer the names to the department. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Because I think we do need to have a broader discussion with the security cluster around the issue of IDs and identification of persons and home affairs. It's just seemingly becoming a headache. So I think the issue that you raise will be an enabler to push back on the frontiers of corruption which prevails. So I think that's one matter, colleague, we need to flag. I just don't think a concerted effort has been made to tighten on citizen security and citizen information. All right, Babulis, over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning to everyone. Mr. Chairman, a lot has been said about systems and failures and so on, but I'll take you back to nearly 3 years ago when UIF appeared before this committee, and I raised then the issue of systems and the failures involved in those systems, and the UIF commissioner made light of my comments. And so we should not be surprised by these systems failures. And I really do hope that Advocate Motibi has more success with getting UIF to actually do something about their systems than I had some nearly 3 years ago. The system, even the normal system for the online system for the UIF is a nightmare to use. It breaks down halfway through when you're there. And it just doesn't work properly. We don't really want to design a system for TERS specifically because we don't want to see TERS back again. We want this virus pandemic over. We want the lockdown lifted and that to be put behind us. But nevertheless, if there were the need for such payments for whatever reason, we have to have competent people designing the system. And people need to listen to criticism, not only from the SIU, but from the users of the system, and of course, from members of parliament like you and I. So, Mr. Chairman, this exercise exposes something that we should not be surprised about. The systems just are shocking. It applies to the compensation fund as well. The only system that is now recovering is the South African Revenue Service, but that almost collapsed, as we all know, under the reign of Mr. Moyane. But it's now starting to recover, and the efficiency of the system is back up to what it should be in most instances. But no such recovery program appears to have been embarked upon by either the Compensation Fund or the UIF. And so I think we, in our report, Mr. Chairman, need to very, very strongly recommend to Parliament about the competence of people designing these systems and implementing them. But thank you to Advocate Motibi and his team for the work they've done in exposing these system weaknesses. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thanks. You are quite right. Actually, the issues you are speaking about, you raised then. You are quite right. I think let's flag those issues as well for next week with the minister. All right, let's get a reaction from a response from the SIU on the issues raised. Obum Chief.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Liz, we really appreciate the comments. We are also of the same view that if the system is designed and developed in a manner that takes into account all the business processes of UIF and in such a manner that it's designed to pick up, you know, all of these irregularities, we will probably see a huge improvement. Of course, not necessarily only for TERS, and Honorable Liz makes an accurate observation that hopefully we don't have a similar large-scale payments under the TERS again. But we need to see an overall improvement. And as I said, we will document all of those and send them to the accounting officer of the department and to the UIF, of course, so that all of these improvements can be brought in But of course, we also have our eyes on all those who are responsible should be dealt with, and there should be consequence management. We really appreciate that. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much, MCB. Colleagues, I don't see any other hand. Are you all good?
I'm good, Chair.
Well, that should be a first. So early, why are you having an early day? All right, maybe, Baba MCB, just
It's because, Chair, the number of these things are mainly dependent on the UIF. Leadership and the ministry. So we'll deal with these matters mainly when we meet them. But indeed, this is very good work. Thank you very much, Chair.
And also, I joined the meeting late, Chair. Perhaps that's why.
Well, that's why. That's probably the main reason. Okay, I see. All right. Colleagues, let's do this because there's been quite a number of personal issues raised here, and I'm just thinking it may be prudent that we have National Treasury and or Public Service Administration next week when we meet with UIF. There are quite a number of system lapses which I think need our attention, and I think Babma Zambane raises an important issue, which he did raise, and one has been flagged about ideas and so on. So I think maybe we let's see if we can put a brief together, Sister Mbiputben, and invite them to our meeting next week, so that we get a broader sense of system and interventions which currently at play to deal with these things, because in as much as we are dealing with the corruption, COVID may have helped, and I'm skating on very thin ground here, but it may have helped to expose the fault lines which ordinarily may have not been receiving the kind of attention that we should in so far as how people abuse the system. And so I think the heightened use of systems of the UIF and so on draw our attention to other areas. So I just think that may help, but I mean, it's something we can discuss on the side offline over the next day or two so that we can get those departments in as part of a broader outlook. But let me get to Mam Tolashe, and then we'll bring our meeting to an end. After that, I'll just make one or two announcements afterwards. Mam T, over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good day, and good day, colleagues, Advocate Matibi, and the team. My chair is just to say, as you are summarizing that way, can't you also call back the report that we had? Remember, we did a visit UIF. There was a report compiled by ourselves. There were systemic issues that could be raised sharply. If you cannot, please call back that report and see, comparing to what we discussed and agreed that was to be implemented by the department, how far did they go in that implementation? Because whilst I am listening from the report presented by Advocate Matibi and the team, I get to understand that some of the issues that are being raised by them were the issues that we also picked up when we visited UIF headquarters, especially as Honorable Mazambane is articulating the issues, the systemic issues. So I'll make that request for us to call back that report and start to compare whether what we do does have some kind of impact, or departments are just listening and not doing anything. To an extent, they get involved into what we saw coming without being resolved by the concerned department. That's my take in this one. Yeah, thank you very much.
No, I think that is fine. Mam Tolashe, you are quite right. So to please pull up that report of ours. And then there's issues, of course, interlinked to this with the compensation fund as well. There's the issue of the forensic investigations that we had directed as part and parcel of cleaning up the mess that currently prevails at UIF and compensation fund. So I think let's pull that up as well. So I think we are fine on that one. Mamdulash, you are correct. I think I really want to also echo the sentiments that have been expressed by colleagues to say, SIU, we thank you very much for the good work that you are doing. You are a beacon of hope, an island of hope in a sea of, well, trouble and chaos. And so I think you can rest assured of our support in the work that you are doing. You may not reach everything that needs to be reached, but we are making significant headway in eating away at the, you know, advances of the corruption that's taking place. I'm glad that you've got the spread plan in December. That works well. I think we have also been held up as parliamentary committees rather because of COVID in having our own strat plans, but I know we've got the green light now to plan for that, and I'm sure we will be as a committee once the nitty-gritties of how we should be doing that are finalized, be inviting yourselves as well to when we're having ours so that we can share insight and perspective in strengthening the work, because I think collaboration is going to be the name of the game of all the law enforcement agencies and parliamentary structures as we sort of just push back on this. So I think we're looking forward to the outcomes of your strat plan so that we can get a sense of the direction that you will be taking, because I think we need to borrow from the experiences of this period to say that it has exposed largely where the problems are. Some of the areas have been neglected, as Babulis has said, and have not received the due attention which they should. And so circumstances compel us now anew that, no, let's go back to those basics, as also Mama Dulashe is saying. And also for us to avoid duplication of recommendation and instruction and working in silos. We are making recommendations on one hand and you're doing work on that. So that's why I'm really emphasizing the issue of collaboration being very, very important. So I think we are going to be taking the matters you have raised with us forward with the UIF next week and the Department of Employment and Labor, and probably with all the other stakeholders who are an integral part of that framework of work. And see how we can take that forward. So I think we are satisfied so far with the work that is being done and the progress that has been made. And of course, we are awaiting your final report on the 30th of November on PPE corruption. So that remains firmly on our radar so that we can see how far that work has gone. Because that was what was indicated to us in our last meeting together for the 30th of November, that report is coming out. I'm sure it will also give progress, of course, on issues around digital vibes, as you call that. There have been developments in that area, so we'll need an update on that. There's court action, there's new work and so on, so that is important that we keep our fingers on the pulse on those issues. So SIU, thank you very much, advocates, you and your team. We thank you very much for the work that you do. Keep it up and rest assured of our support. Colleagues,
thank you, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. Two announcements. We're meeting this evening. Is it 6 o'clock or 6:30, Ms. Ntombi?
Let me check.
6:30, those.
6:30.
Yeah, 6:30. National Treasury Expansions and Deviations, the meeting that was from last week, which did not proceed, that's tonight. And so maybe it's all the well that we finish early this morning. And then we'll take that work forward this evening. National Treasury. Colleagues, yesterday we ended on a note of saying we're going to visit the South African Post Office. We want to finalize that application by tomorrow. So could colleagues please indicate to Sistombi and Ben, those who will be attending, I'm sure will be leaving on the Thursday evening, so we can have an early start on that Friday, and factor in a structured oversight to the South African Post Office. So I'll request colleagues that you advise Sistombi and Ben probably at the end of this meeting, say by 12, so that they know, so they can finalize the logistics of that oversight. And then to say that next week we'll be taking forward the issues from this meeting of the UIF with the department, and we'll be factoring in all the issues that have been raised. So colleagues, I think, are we all good on that note?
Good, bye-bye.
All right, colleagues, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, have a good day. We shall meet this evening at 6:30 with National Treasury. Yes, I used to, but have a good day further, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Aye.